When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thanks for tuning into Americana Music Profiles. The next episode starts right now.
You are tuned in to another edition of Americana Music Profiles, brought to you by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine and AmericanaMusicMagazine.com. I'm your host, Greg Tutwiler. Let's jump right in to the next exciting interview. Dean M. Collins grew up on a farm in Kentucky, joined the Navy and became a pilot, left the Navy and became a pilot for Delta Airlines, and all through that time, he's dabbled in music for most of his life, relying on memories and nostalgia to help him craft his songs. In June of this year, he is releasing his new album, Land Where the Wishes Come True. Dean joins us for this edition of Americana Music Profiles to talk about his life and this new album. Hey, Dean, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and talk to your listeners.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time, making the cross-country connection. I'm in Virginia, of course, and you're presently in California. You were telling me that your day gig is a pilot, and that just happens to be where you are at the moment.
That's right. I always joke my side gig is as a commercial airline pilot, and I usually play time zone roulette. I don't know where I am or what day it is sometimes, but I'm just I wake up in London. I'm like, and then I'll text my wife, and I'm like, why did you text me at 3 a.m?
Yeah, that's funny. So, how did this whole music thing start for you?
So it started back in college. I guess it really started before that. I grew up on a farm in Kentucky, and it was about 650 acres, so I was pretty isolated.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom had given me a guitar, and I put it in a closet, when I was like 8 or 9 or whatever. But at one point we had to, memorize a poem for school, and I knew that I could remember music, and I loved music, and mm-hmm. I thought, well, maybe if I play a few notes, I can remember the poem. And then I did that, and then that kind of grew from there. So I carried a guitar everywhere until I graduated high school, went to college, started a band, and then recorded my senior year for the first time in a recording studio. And I said, man, this is where I want to be. Hmm. That was in 87.
Wow.
And I've been making music against all better judgment ever since.
So you left college, ended up in the military, right?
Correct. Yeah, Desert Storm. I went through training, and Desert Shield, Desert Storm was just starting. So I rolled right over there into that.
Hmm.
And by the time I left the States, I'd already knocked out 3 albums in just 3 years.
Wow.
My last one was with Brad Wood, who was just starting out in Chicago. And then I went to Desert Shield and right into the war. I was a C-2 pilot, which is a carrier-based platform, and got to do that for a few years.
Wow. And you were active until how long?
So I was active for 10 and then in the reserves for 10. So I got hired by Delta in 98. And so I was kind of in both for about 10 years. I was flying for the military in the reserves and then flying for Delta as well. So those were some busy times. There were times I didn't have any days off or
mm-hmm.
I spent half the year overseas, So it was, it was exciting and fun and challenging, but I was younger and it was just the way to do it.
Did you keep up with your music while you were involved in that?
So that was challenging. Like I said, right before I left, I recorded. I did some music with another friend in the military, and that was so the F-14 Tomcats had a big event, a gala every year. So they picked us to do the music for that. So that was kind of more of a hard rock kind of a mm-hmm. Cliche, but it was fun, and they all the F-14 guys loved it. So that's floating around out there. I would do little things here or there. I think I did a little 3-song EP back in like 95 or 96, but I didn't do a whole album from that 1990 until I think I recorded a whole album again in 2012. I had a long period off.
So the music, so you're back into music, I'm assuming, as full-time as you can be given the present circumstances.
Right.
So what does that look like for you when you get a chance to play? Do you have dates? Do you do some outside of your current area kind of dates, solo with a band? What does that look like?
So I'm kind of unusual in that I'm the only person in this group of musicians that doesn't really play live. My big gig this year is playing at my 40th high school reunion.
Oh, wow.
And it'll be me and a couple locals in Bardstown, Kentucky. We're going to put something together. But, you know, my drummer's out with Joe Satriani right now. Michael Cleveland is, he's everywhere. And Justin Moses and Sierra Hall are out doing their thing. So everyone is just tearing it up out there playing live. And so really I exist kind of as a studio band.
I see.
And,
okay.
Because I'm already gone, you know, 14, 15 days a month, you know, everyone says, oh, don't you want to take this out live? And I'm like, no. I said, I have been on a world tour since 1987. And, you know, I've been doing the buses and the hotels and everything. And the idea of more of that, you know, I sure love my family so much.
Yeah, and, yeah.
So I'm making peace with doing my work in the studio. Maybe a few, you know, cats and dogs here and there. I might do, like, you know, some live things, but not too much. I'm just thrilled to work with these incredible musicians, and I would never expect them to take such a huge pay cut to work with me as a, you know, kind of up and comer who doesn't tour a lot.
So we were talking earlier before we, went live, the new album Land Where the Wishes Come True. That's the one that you're referring to. And correct. You were telling me about some of the folks that you've gotten to play with you on this. Tell our audience who some of your band members are.
So the musicians who play on this thing are phenomenal, but they're very diverse backgrounds. And I kind of joked that this is really an improbable band because I'm good friends with Kenny Aronoff, who played with Mellencamp. And, you know, says he's the loudest drummer in show business. And I've taken off my hearing protection. He may be right. Oh, my gosh, he's loud. So he plays the drums and percussion. And then James Lomenzo from Megadeth, a bass monster.
Yeah.
He plays the bass.
That's crazy.
Yet you have Michael Cleveland and Justin Moses adding the bluegrass instruments. We have Smokin' Brett Resnick who played with Casey Musgraves.
Yeah.
My keyboard player, Ty Bailey, he played with Katy Perry for years, was her keyboard player, musical director.
Wow.
And then Doug Pettibone, who plays with Lucinda Williams. He's on a couple tracks helping out on rhythm guitar. He had beautiful guitars, by the way. I had such guitar envy. But it's an improbable mix of these people. And, you know, Jimmy Zavala, who was in Tom Petty's band, he was in Rod Stewart's band. He throws some harmonica down on a couple tunes. But it really didn't make sense on paper. And if anyone said, well, now you're going to alienate potentially two audiences, you'll alienate country, you'll alienate Americana, maybe bluegrass too, because, you know, you've got this smash mouth Americana country with bluegrass elements. So it was kind of improbable, but I think it kind of works.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so, you know, it's kind of its own genre.
So did you go after those guys, or were they the ones that were kind of available at the moment when you needed a particular musician?
It's kind of it's like one. There were a few good things that came out of the COVID lockdowns and so forth. One of them was that I had worked with Kenny and Aronoff before. We'd already done one album together, and we love to make music together. But we were scheduled to start recording right when the lockdown hit, so we had to push it until we could record in California again because they opened businesses, and so that gave me a little more time to kind of put it together. And then I thought, well, all these guys are staying home now. And I had already worked with Smokin' Brett Resnick, but I started saying, hey, we're doing this album. And I cold wrote Michael Cleveland an email Now, I grew up in Bardstown, Kentucky, and, you know, I'd heard of this kid going around to all these festivals.
Yeah.
And just all he did was, I want to jam. And I saw him a few times, and then I saw him probably, he was still probably not quite 20, and I saw him at our courthouse in Bardstown, Kentucky. And like anyone who sees him for the first time, I was gobsmacked. He gets up on stage, and it's like, oh, my God, where's this coming from?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I just cold wrote him. I said, hey, and I kind of told him that story. And he said, well, let me hear what you got. You know, so that's how that started. And then when he said yes, I was just, oh, my gosh, this is like, you know, one of the greatest living fiddle players is playing on my album.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So I had reached out to Chris Thiele, his people, and that was like a moonshot. Of course, he was so busy, he couldn't do anything. But I told my friend Craig Habekhurst, you know, a real champion of the roots music and, you know, the IBMA and everything in Nashville. And he said, you know, I just interviewed Sierra Hall and her husband. Why don't you reach out to them? And so I did. And they were locked down as well. And so she said she was kind of busy, but, you know, he would do it. So so it just kind of built like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Kenny had introduced me to James Lomenzo, who was in, they were both playing for Fogerty at the time. And Kenny had said, I know this sounds crazy, but, you know, my buddy James really liked the tunes. He said it's in his wheelhouse and he'd love to work on these songs with you.
Wow, and that's cool.
And when I met him, it was funny because he's like, all right, I know what you're thinking. Because all it is black and sunglasses and stuff. But he's like, this stuff is my wheelhouse, and I just love it. He said, I'll show you my playlist, you know. And we were reaching for, like, even though it's Americana, you know, it's country bluegrass, there were definitely some Laurel Canyon, 1970s, America, and Eagles in there.
Yeah.
And so he was really drawn to that.
Yeah.
So that's how he got in there. And then Kenny had also introduced me to Ty Bailey after some event. He had just gotten off his retainer, or whatever you call it, with Katy Perry. And he said, hey, my wife works for Delta. She's a flight attendant. I'm like, wow, what a small world. And Kenny said, this guy's phenomenal on the Hammond. And I love the B3. So, mm-hmm. Like, okay, done. So it all just kind of happened organically. And I guess COVID lockdown kind of made this possible, because suddenly these guys had a lot of free time on their hands.
Yeah.
Now, the downside is, you know, as I joked to my drummer about this, I said, you know, you did the Lonesome Jubilee in 1987. So now we're doing the Lonesome Jamboree, because we all have to do it isolated because we still couldn't travel and
mm-hmm.
all that.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of isolated playing. There was isolated playing going on, which also is not a big bluegrass thing. However, I will say that on Michael Cleveland's new album, it came out that his first song, I think it's Contact, he does with Bela Fleck, they actually did that remotely as well. Hmm. So anyway, that was kind of, we were forced into it, but it opened this opportunity up to work with these incredible people.
Yeah.
And I'm just over the moon to have worked with these, you know, these people I've admired for so long, these legends. And it just, you know, I just pinch myself sometimes.
Yeah. Well, you definitely, it's kind of one of those all-star bands that, kind of like you said, you could have never put it together at any other time in the world, probably, except during that season. And you hit the feel on the 70s, a couple tracks, one of them in particular, I think That's All. I felt,
oh, yeah.
I felt very the Eagles.
Yes.
You know, some of that early 70s Eagles was like, man, this is just... you know, fits right in that genre perfectly. So you definitely got that lined up in that song, but others, I heard it as well. So that's cool. Did you give the band a name?
No, I just kept my name because I wasn't sure if they'd ever say yes again. So
well,
right now it's, you know, Kenny and I joke that we're just two guys in the garage cranking out great tunes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then whoever wants to climb, you know, jump on board, you know, hop in the truck and we'll make some tunes.
Well, it's it's the band that never toured, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I know. So anyway, and then I just called it my name. Now, I have to say, some people said, why, that's so pretentious to call yourself Dean M. Collins. And the whole reason I did that years ago, my mom went on online trying to find my music, and she found Dean Collins. And
yeah,
she called me and she said, you know, I like your older stuff better. Your new stuff isn't very good. I wouldn't keep doing that. And she had found someone totally different.
Okay.
And so I said, oh, gosh. Well, so then I put the M in there just to make sure
that
she knew it was me. So that's kind of how I did that.
Wow.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the Eagles influence. The engineer I worked with in Kenny's studio, he actually worked with Glenn Frey when he first moved to Los Angeles on his demo tracks.
Hmm.
So he would tell me these stories, and this is Dave Jenkins I worked with, and he would tell me stories about how to Glenn the demos were king. And he told me about sessions where he's doing the demos that became huge Eagles hits.
Hmm.
So I thought that was amazing to get to work with him, because I got to hear these stories about the whole songwriting process,
mm-hmm.
how some things on the demo he liked so much that he used those tracks, you know, in the actual recording, because he said demo is king. I want to hear, you know, I want it to, you know, be a feel like this demo. So it's funny you mentioned that. And I had a big weight on my shoulders because I was the only one doing the vocals by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I studied America. I studied the Eagles because to me, their harmonies are just peerless. So I don't know if I hit the mark, but that's what I studied, especially on that song, and really tried to dial that in. And, you know, the band was all on board with it.
Yeah, well, it definitely came through for sure. The songs that are on this album, did you write them for the record specifically, or were they songs that you had collected for a while you were thinking about putting this together?
You know, most of them I had written for this.
Okay.
I just finished in 2019 in June. I released an album that was more rock, but it had fiddle, it had mandolin on songs. It had the elements that were leading me towards this, but yet to fully embrace Americana bluegrass. I'd yet to embrace my roots, but it was leading me in that direction. And then when I started writing songs, then I started coming up with the concept.
Mm.
And I worked pretty closely in the beginning with Craig Habegger from Nashville when I told him this crazy idea I had, and we kind of thought it through. So it was very intentional. It was a concept album like they used to make. However, there were a couple tunes that I had recorded before that I wasn't completely happy with, you know, more like demos or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I did add those to the mix. And there were songs I'd written a long time ago. Like That's All I wrote in probably 1988, I think.
Okay.
It's sat in my songbook.
Yeah.
Okay. So that wasn't written specifically for the album, but it fit in with where I wanted to go. And I was listening to Jim Croce also in a lot of the Laurel Canyon stuff with the Byrds and Crosby, Stills, Nash, Buffalo, Springfield, as I was coming up with this, to try to have that in there as well. But I did have the concept. And then when I wrote the song Land Where the Wishes Come True, it really kind of tied it all together for me. And that's when it became very clear what I was trying to accomplish with this.
Cool. Am I right in saying that this isn't actually officially out yet? Is that correct?
Yes, it's not out. So it was funny because it was out for a little bit, and I put it on the streaming sites, you know, when I finished up, you know, a couple of years ago, and I rushed it out. No promo, just like I thought, like, you know, Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Well, no one came.
Okay.
I sold $50 worth of music in like a year. And then I just, and then I went back and I did some remixing, when Dr. Music expressed interest in me working together. I said, well, let's redo the singles. Let's, you know, let's go full 1987 Lonesome Jubilee on these drums and just really make them pop.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's cool.
And so the first three singles all were new mixes since the original time I released it.
Mm.
But the actual release, tomorrow the third single comes out. That'll be the final single for now. and then the album drops June 16th. So okay. June 16th, all 13 songs come out to kick you in the feels and pin your ears back, hopefully.
And those will all be on the normal streaming services then at that point?
Yeah, they'll be on everything. And this is kind of a cool thing. So that guy mentioned Brad Wood, who I worked with in Chicago, and he had worked with some of the big acts back there after we worked together, including like Liz Phair and Pete Yorn and Veruca Salt, Smashing Pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
But Brad is now a proponent of the Atmos, Dolby Atmos. And he's prolific, and he does beautiful work with that.
Mm.
So I had known that Apple was really promoting spatial music because they sell AirPod Pros that can put that effect, you know, can bring that effect to the listener.
Right.
And so I thought, well, why not do a couple of these mixes in Atmos and just see how that goes? So my single coming out tomorrow is also going to come out in Dolby Atmos. And the fun thing about it, they've got a spatial mode where it puts you right in the middle of the mix. So you can either, you know, when you turn your head, the mix moves with you, or you can do it fixed. You put your phone in front of you. And let's say you hear Michael Cleveland, you know, you hear him playing on the right side. If you turn your head to the right, he gets louder.
Wow.
And it's cool. Like you're in the center of the band.
Yeah.
So it was so fun. So I got this mix and I'm looking around the room, you know, my wife's looking at me like, what are you doing? And I'm like smiling because now I'm focusing on the pedal steel or the mandolin. And we did some fun things that are really subtle. We tried not to make it, you know, tacky or
uh-huh.
you know, too ridiculous. But we have a part in a song where I wanted the mandolin and the banjo to kind of dance together. So we had the banjo doing a real slow circle around the room, like it was, you know, spinning the mandolin in the middle. And, you know, I thought that was kind of that point in the song is kind of about the dance of marriage and
uh-huh.
life.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, no one will ever know it probably, but it's there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of fun. So anyway, that's another exciting thing when those will come out as well. And you can hear the singles kind of in a different way.
That's cool. So where can folks find the music, all the streaming services, of course, a website perhaps that they can interact with you and learn more about the process?
Right. So I've got a YouTube channel, Dean M. Collins Music. I've got my DeanMCollins.com is my website. You know, obviously all over the social media, Facebook, TikTok. So that's all out there. And then Dr. Music in Germany, they have, you know, a lot of the information as well. I've got physical CDs coming out, which is pretty exciting. You know, everyone goes crazy about vinyl, but, you know, really to me, the CD has, you know, really great sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to have some physical CDs coming out as well. Those links are just popping up now. Those will be on the website and social media, but those are starting to become available all over the world. And that's really fun for me. And so I'm really excited about that as well.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, thanks, Dean. I enjoyed talking to you and getting to know more about how all of this works for you and the process of your new record. And we certainly wish you well with it. Drop it on the 16th. Again, it's called Land Where the Wishes Come True. And, man, I hope it just busts open for you.
That would be fantastic. You know, there was one thing I did want to mention to you before we go, and this is something that I just learned pretty recently.
Sure.
Kind of an interesting thing that ties into the Americana rhythm. You know, I'm a big guitar fan, and I joke that, you know, I use a Gibson SJ-200, and I joke that that should get songwriting credits because I swear sometimes some of those notes just come out on their own. And
yeah.
Wow, that's really cool, these little licks.
Yeah.
But I had just learned from Kenny Aronoff what he thinks is the most important instrument for him to work with on a song. And I always thought it was bass. I didn't even know, and I've been working with him. Well, it turns out that he had told me stories about how he recording process or songwriting process with Mellencamp in the days. They would sit in their little kitchen. Mellencamp would come in with a guitar, acoustic guitar, and Kenny would tap out on the table. And, you know, if John kept playing, that was a good sign. That meant that whatever Kenny was doing was good. I think Kenny played, you know, tap out a little louder, but you know, crumbling down. A lot of the songs he told me about the process. So that's when we met. He kind of told me that. And in the studio, the same thing. He's got a pad of paper. He charts everything. And I've got my guitar, and it's kind of like we're doing it like that.
Yeah.
But I just heard from him that the most important instrument for him to create a song was the rhythm guitar.
Interesting.
And that was surprising. And he said, you know, he's listening. He can hear the hi-hat. He can hear all the things. So he locks in mm-hmm. on that. And I just realized that. And there were a couple songs that we did on this album that he said, he is locked in so much to my guitar part, so I can't change that guitar part because that is what he's locked in on. And so that was kind of a cool revelation. I thought he'd say bass or whatever, but it was the rhythm guitar, which I thought was really, really neat. And obviously that goes back to his beginnings mm-hmm. in that sitting at that kitchen table in Indiana, knocking those songs out,
mm-hmm.
an acoustic guitar that he was tapping to. So yeah. That kind of got into his DNA. So knowing him all these years, I didn't even know that. So that was kind of a surprising thing that I think your listeners might be kind of find kind of cool.
Yeah, cool. Cool stories, man. Thanks, Dean. I enjoyed talking to you, man. I'd love to do it again sometime.
Same here. And I hope to be putting out music for a long time. And thank you so much for this opportunity to maybe get some more listeners.
Absolutely. Take care.
All right, you too.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.